they were not hurt so badly as they thought. They will hardly have scars to show for it. That's good to know, I said, and started sipping at my cola and chomping down hot, steaming French fries. But what I'm really interested in, I said, is knowing why your blood was in Marconi's restaurant the night before the full moon. Tara took a hamburger patty off the bun and started nibbling on it, holding it in her fingers. Ask another time. No offense, I said, but I'm not so sure there's going to be another time, so tell me. Tara took another bite of meat and then shrugged. I knew that the pack that had harassed my fiancé was about. I deducted where they might strike and went there to attempt to stop them. All by yourself? Tara sniffed. Most of those people who turn themselves into wolves know little about being wolf wizard. But these had taken too much of the beast inside. I ran through the window glass and fought, but they outnumbered me. I left before I could be killed. And what about these kids? I said, nodding toward the back of the van. She glanced back at them, and for a moment I saw warmth and a pride gleaming in her eyes, subverting the remote alien lines of her face. Children, but with strong hearts. They wished to learn, and I taught. Let them tell their tale. Maybe later, I said, and finished off the French fries. Where are we going? To a safe place, to arm and prepare ourselves. Myself, I corrected her, to prepare myself. I'm not taking you with me. You are incorrect, Tara said. I am going with you. No. She fastened her amber eyes on mine. You are strong, wizard, but you have not yet seen my beast. The men you will oppose will take my fiancé from me. I will not allow that. I will be with you, or you will have to kill me to stop me. This time, it was me who looked away first. I sipped my drink, scowling, while Tara placidly ate more of hamburger patty. Who are you? I asked her finally. One who has lost too many of her family already, she said. And then she settled back on the seat and withdrew from the conversation, falling silent. One who has lost too many, I grumbled, frustrated, mocking her beneath my breath. I turned back to the front of the van and hunched my shoulders over my burger. Put some clothes on, you weird, yellow-eyed, table-dancing, werewolf-training, cryptic, stare-me-right-in-the-eyes and don't even blink, wench. There was a hissing sound from the back seat, and I flicked a scowl over my shoulder. Tara was chewing on her meat. Her eyes were shining, her mouth was curved at the corners, and her breath was puffing out of her nostrils in near-silent laughter. The safe place we were going to turned out to be a big house up near the Gold Coast, not far from Marconi's own mini-palace. The house wasn't large, but by the neighborhood standards, that was like saying that a bale of hay isn't much to eat, by elephant standards. Susan drove the van up through a break in the high hedge, up a long driveway of white concrete, and into the six-car garage, whose doors rolled majestically up before us. I got out of the van, in the garage, and stared at the Mercedes and the Suburban also parked there. Where are we? I said. Tara opened the door of the van, and Georgia, Billy, and the other young men emerged, assisting the two wounded werewolves out. Georgia stretched, which did interesting things to the dark bathrobe, and drew her mane of tawny hair back from her lean face with one hand. It's my parents' place. They're in Italy for another week. I rubbed a hand over my face. They aren't going to mind you having a party, are they? She flashed me an annoyed little look and said, Not as long as we clean up all the blood. Come on, Billy. Let's get these two inside and into bed. You go on, he said, fastening his eyes on me. I'll be along in a minute. Georgia looked like she wanted to give him an argument, but shook her head and, with the help of the other young man, helped the two invalids inside. Tara, still naked and supremely unconcerned about it, followed them, glancing back over her shoulder at me before she disappeared. Susan promptly stepped in front of me, somewhat obstructing the view, and said, 5 minutes, Dresden. Come and find me then. Was my rapier reply, and then Susan went into the house, too. I stood there in the dark with Billy, the stout, short kid in thick glasses. He had his hands stuffed into his bathrobe pockets, and he was peering at me. Do all wizards, he said, get kiddie crowns and wear them around, or is it only for special occasions? Do all werewolves, I shot back, snatching the crown from my head, wear glasses and too much old spice, or is that only for full moons? He grinned at me, rather than taking umbrage. You're quick, he said. I always wanted to be that way. He stuck out his hand toward me. Billy Borden. I traded grips with him wearily, and he tried to crush my hand in his. Harry Dresden, I told him. You look pretty beat up, Mr. Dresden, he said. Are you sure you can handle going out again tonight? No, I answered, in a spurt of brutal honesty. Billy nodded and pushed his glasses up higher onto his nose. Then you need our help. Oh, good grief. The Mickey Mouse Club of Werewolves wanted to throw in on my side. Werewolf taker roll call. Billy, Georgia, Tommy, Cindy. Sheesh. No way, I said. Absolutely not. Why not? He said. Look, kid, you don't even know what these Hex and Wolfen can be like. You don't know what Marconi can be like, and you sure as hell have never seen anything like McFinn outside of a movie theater. And even if you had the skills to deal with it, what makes you think you have the right to be going along? Billy considered the question seriously. The same thing that makes you think you do, Mr. Dresden, he said. I opened my mouth and closed it again. I know I don't know a lot compared to you, Billy said, but I'm not stupid. I've got eyes. I see some things everyone else tries to pretend aren't there. This vampire craze sweeping the nation. Why the hell shouldn't there be some genuine vampires in it? Did you know that violent crimes have increased nearly 40% in the last 3 years, Mr. Dresden? Murder alone has doubled, particularly in heavy urban areas and isolated rural areas. Abductions and disappearances have gone up nearly 300%. I blinked at the kid. I hadn't really read the numbers. I knew that Murphy and some of the other cops said that the streets were getting worse, and I knew myself, on some deep level, that the world was getting darker. Hell, it was one of the reasons I did idiotic things like I was doing tonight, my own effort to lift up the torch. I'm sort of a pessimist, Mr. Dresden. I think that people are almost too incompetent to hurt themselves too badly. I mean, if criminals were trying, they couldn't increase their production by 300%. And I hear stories, read the tabloids sometimes. So what if the supernatural world is making a comeback? What if that accounts for some of what is going on? What if it does? I asked him. Billy regarded me steadily, without looking me in the eyes. Someone has to do something. I can, so I should. That's why we're here, the Alphas. Tara offered us a chance to do something. When she met us through the Northwest Passage Project, and we took it. I stared at the kid. I could have argued with him, but there wouldn't be much point to it. I knew his argument, backward and forward. I worked it out myself. If I was 10 years younger, a foot shorter, and a couple of pounds heavier, that could have been me talking. And I had to admit, the kid did have power. I mean, turning yourself into a wolf is no cheap parlor trick. But I did have one angle to play, and I took it. I didn't want this kid's blood on my hands. I don't think you're ready for the big leagues yet, Billy. Could be, he said, but there's no one else in the bullpen. I had to give the kid credit. He had resolve. Maybe you should sit this one out and live to fight another day. It could all go bad. And if it does, those Hexenwolfen we took on down by the beach are going to be coming for you. Someone will need to stay with your wounded people and protect them. More likely, if they go through you, they're going to go through us, too. It would be smarter to pile on everything we've got in one place, with you. I chuckled. All your eggs in one basket? He shook his head. All the money on the most likely winner. I studied him in a silence for a long minute. I was confident of his sincerity. It just oozed out of him in a way that only the really inexperienced and idealistic can manage. It was comforting, and at the same time it was the most frightening thing about him. His ignorance. No, not ignorance, really. Innocence. He didn't know what he was going out to face. If I let him go along, I'd be dragging him down with me. Despite what he'd seen tonight, I'd be exposing him to a whole new, violent, bloody, and dangerous world. One way or another, if I let Billy Borden and his buddies go with me, these innocent children wouldn't live to see the sunrise. But God help me, he was right about one thing. I needed the help. Everyone who's going takes orders from me, I said, and he drew in a sharp breath, his eyes gleaming. Not Tara. You do what I say, you do it when I say it. And if I tell you to leave, you go. No questions. You got it? I got it, Billy said, and he gave me a cocky grin that simply did not belong on the face of a geeky college nerd in a black bathrobe. You're a smart man, Mr. Dresden. I snorted at him. And just then, the automatic light on the garage door opener went out, leaving us in darkness. There was a disgusted sound from the doorway, and then the lights came on again. Georgia, in all her willowy, annoyed glory, was standing in the doorway to the garage. Billy Borden, she said. Don't you have any better sense than to stay here in the dark? She stalked out toward him, scowling. He looked up at her calmly and said, Tell everyone we're going along. Dresden's in charge. If they can handle that, they're in. And if not, they're staying here to guard Cindy and Alice. Georgia's eyes widened and she gave a little whoop of excitement. She turned toward me and threw her arms around me for a moment, making my shoulders scream in pain, and then whirled to Billy and bent down to do the same thing. He winced when she did, and she stood up and jerked back his black bathrobe, clearing it off to one side of his pale chest. To give the kid credit, his stoutness was the result of what looked like quite a bit of solid muscle, and along the line of his chest there was a thickly clotted wound, still trickling blood in a few places. What's this? Georgia said. You idiot. You didn't tell me you'd gotten hurt. Billy shrugged and pulled his robe straight again. It closed, and you can't bandage it and keep it on me when I change, anyway. Georgia clucked her teeth, annoyed. You shouldn't have gone for the hamstring on that wolf. He was too fast. Billy flashed her a grin. I almost got him, though. You almost got yourself killed, she said, but her voice had softened a few shades. I noticed that she hadn't moved her hand from the side of Billy's chest, and he was looking up at her with an expectant expression. She fell silent, and they stared at one another for a minute. I saw her swallow. Please help me. Young werewolves in love. I turned to walk into the house, moving carefully. I never much believed in God. Well, that's not quite true. I believed that there was a God, or something close enough to warrant the name. If there were demons, there had to be angels, right? If there was a devil, somewhere there had to be God. But he and I had never really seen things in quite the same terms. All the same, I flashed up a look at the ceiling. I didn't say any words, not even inside. But if God was listening, I hope he got the message nonetheless. I didn't want any of these children getting themselves killed. Chapter 27. Susan's perfume led me to her. She was waiting for me in a bedroom on the first floor. She stood in the simply furnished room, her jeans and the white t-shirt blazoned with the words, Eat it? I wouldn't sit on it. It was one of mine. She lifted her chin up high as she saw me, as though trying to keep the tears in her eyes from falling. Our gazes met and held. We had looked into one another before. More than a year ago. She'd fainted when she saw what was inside of me through the soul gaze. I don't know what it was she saw. I don't look too hard into mirrors. Inside of her, though, I'd seen passion, like I'd rarely known in people other than myself. The motivation to go, to do, to act. It was what drove her forward, digging up stories of the supernatural for a half-comic rag like the arcane. She had a gift for it, for digging down into the muck that people tried to ignore, and coming up with facts that weren't always easily explained. She made people think. It was something personal for her. I knew that much, but not why. Susan was determined to make people see the truth. I shut the door behind me and limped toward her. They'll kill you, she said. Don't go. As I reached her, she put her hands against my chest, then her cheek. I've got to. Denton can't afford to let me live now. I need to finish this business before it gets any more out of hand. Before more people die. If I don't go tonight, Denton will be able to kill Marconi and McFinn and set McFinn up for all the killings. He'll get away clean, and then he'll be able to focus on me. And maybe you, too. We can go somewhere, she said quietly. We could hide. I blinked my eyes closed. She'd said we. She hadn't really done that much before. I hadn't really thought in those terms either. I hadn't much thought in those terms for a lot of years. Not since the last time. I should have said something about it, acknowledged the implication. I knew it was there, and she knew that I'd noticed it. She held still, waiting. Instead, I said, I'm not much good at hiding. Neither are you. Her breath went out a little whisper, and I felt her tighten a little against me. There would be tears on my shirt, I knew, but I didn't look down at her. You're right, she said a moment later. Her voice was shaking. And I know you are, but I'm afraid, Harry. I mean, I know we haven't been really close friends and lovers, but... Work, I said. I closed my eyes. She nodded. Work. Her fingers tightened on my shirt, and she looked up at me, dark eyes swimming with tears, still more on the smooth lines of her cheek. I don't want to lose you now. I don't want the work to be all that's left. I tried to think of something smart to say, something that would reassure her, calm her, help her feel better, to understand what I felt for her. But I wasn't even sure what it was that I felt. I found myself kissing her, the rough growth on my mouth and chin brushing her soft skin. She tensed at first, and then melted against me with a deliciously feminine sort of willingness, a soft abandonment of distance that left her body in all its dark beauty pressed against mine. The kiss deepened, slowed, became something intense and erotic and self-contained. The motion of our lips, the warmth of our bodies pressed together, the touch of my fingertips on her face, feather light, the scratch of her nails as her fingers kneaded my shirt. My heart was pounding, and I could feel hers, too, racing. She broke the kiss first, and I swayed on my feet, my breath gone. Without speaking, she guided me down to the edge of the bed and sat me there. Then she vanished into the bathroom, reappearing with a basin of warm water, some soap, and a washcloth. She undressed me, slowly, delicately. She changed the bandages, murmuring softly to me when it hurt, kissing my eyes and forehead to soothe me. She bathed me with the water, its warmth washing away the dried sweat, the blood, and some of the pain. Patiently, more gentle than rain, she made me clean while I drifted. My eyes closed. I could hear myself make a soft sound now and then in response to her touches. I felt her come to me, felt her bare skin against mine, hot and smooth. I opened my eyes and saw the silver haze of the moon on the far horizon across the lake. I saw Susan outlined in it, all sweetly feminine curves and lines, a beautiful shadow. She kissed me again, and I returned it in kind. And it was a liquid, smooth thing, as restrained and desperate as the near-still surface of a rushing river. Her lips passed from my mouth and roamed over the skin she had just cleaned, and when I tried to touch her, she gently pressed my hands back down, telling me without words to be still. It went on like that, all skin and light touches, soft sighs, pounding hearts, until she settled atop me, keeping her weight off me with her legs, her hands afraid to cause any pain. We moved together, feeling the power of our need, our hunger for one another, a pure blend of desire and warmth and affection and incredible intimacy that shook us to the core. It ended in silence, the sensation all the more piercing for that, our mouths together, our breaths mingling. She lay down beside me until our pounding hearts slowed down. And then she rose and said, I don't know if I want to fall in love with you, Harry. I don't know if I could stand it. I opened my eyes and answered softly, I've never wanted to hurt you. I don't know what's right. I know it feels right, she said, and kissed me again, then started touching my forehead, lifting her head back to study me with gentle, compassionate eyes. You see so much pain. I just wanted to remind you that there was something else in the world. I'm a pretty tough guy. I mean, look at me. I can handle some rough stuff. But some things I'm not so tough about. I started crying, hard, and Susan held me, rocked me gently, until the tears had gone away. I wanted to stay there, where it was warm, where I was clean, and where there wasn't anyone dying. There wasn't any blood or snarling animals, and no one was trying to kill me. I liked the idea of being there, with Susan, in her arms, a whole lot more than I liked the idea of going out into the silver light of the full moon, which was growing greater underneath the horizon, coming up in a hazy nimbus. Instead, I drew away from her a little and sat up. It was a fool's moon. She rose and went to an overnight bag, returning with it, and drew out a pair of my black jeans, my black sneakers, socks, a heavy, dark gray shirt, dark undies to complete the color theme, and bless her heart, ibuprofen. I rose to dress, but she pressed a hand on my shoulder and made me sit down, then dressed me herself, slowly and carefully, her attention focused on the task. Neither of us spoke. Ever had a beautiful, naked woman dress you? Talk about girding your loins for battle. There was something indescribably soothing and at the same time exciting about it. I could feel my body becoming more relaxed and aware, my senses more in tune with what was around me. I heard footsteps in the hall and a knock at the door. Tara's voice called, Wizard, it is time. I stood up, but Susan grabbed my wrist. Harry, she said. Wait a minute. She knelt down by the bag and drew out a heavy box, flat and broad. I was going to give it to you for your birthday, but I thought you could use it. I tilted my head and took the box in hand. It was heavy. What is it? I asked her. Just open it, dummy, she answered, smiling up at me. I did, and inside was the smell of soft, worked leather, sensuous and thick, wrapped up in translucent paper. I tossed the lid aside, took the paper out, and found dark leather, new and matte black, hardly casting back the light. I took it out of the box, and it unfolded into a heavy, long coat, like my own duster in design, even to the mantle around the shoulders and arms, but it was made of the finer material. I blinked at the coat. It must have cost you a fortune. She laughed wickedly. Yeah, but I got to wear it around naked, just to feel it on my skin. Her face sobered. I want you to have it, Harry. Something for me, for luck. She glided to my side and helped me slide into the coat. The coat settled around me with a comforting heaviness and a peculiar sort of familiarity. It felt just right. I plucked my mother's pentacle from its chain from beneath my shirt and wore it openly. Then I got Harris's confiscated sidearm from my coveralls tool pouch and put it in the coat's pocket. I didn't have any other magical tools, and maybe not any more magic. The gun, all things considered, seemed to be an uncertain weapon, at best. But I was as ready as I was going to be. I turned to say goodbye to Susan, to find her hurriedly stepping into her clothes. What are you doing? I asked. Getting dressed, she said. Why? Someone's got to drive the van, Dresden. She tugged on her T-shirt, slung her jacket over her shoulder, and walked past me, pausing to give me a narrow glance. Besides, this could be the biggest paranormal event I've ever had a chance to cover. Did you expect me to stay behind? She pushed the door open and gave me an expectant look. Damn, I thought, and double damn. One more person to worry about. One more person to protect. Susan wasn't a werewolf. She wasn't a wizard. She didn't even have a gun. It was crazy to let her even think about going along. But I found myself wanting to make sure she was somewhere close. All right, I said. But the same rules I gave the kids. I'm in charge. You do what I say, when I say, or you stay here. Susan pursed her lips and narrowed her eyes. I kind of like the sound of that, she said, teasing me. I like that look on you, too. Have you ever thought about growing a beard? Then she smiled and vanished into the hallway. I scowled after her. She'd stay away from the worst of it. I'd make sure of that, if I had to tie her to the van myself. I muttered something grouchy, bent my head to one side, and inhaled, smelling the smell of new leather, of fresh clothes and soap, and of Eau de Susan still lingering on my skin. I liked it. The jacket creaked as I started forward, and I caught sight of myself in the dresser mirror. My double, the one from the dream, stared back out at me. Only the roughness of the 3-day growth of dark whiskers and the bruises were at contrast with the subconscious me's neatly trimmed beard. Everything else was precisely the same. I turned my face away rather quickly and paced out of the room, out to the van, where the others were waiting. Showtime. Chapter 28. The moon rose in silver splendor into an October sky, strewn with pale clouds and brilliant stars. The clouds churned, a white seafoam sea, and the moon was a vast, graceful clipper ship, its sails full of spectral light as it ran before the strength of the cold autumn winds. Pale light bleached each of the uncut stones on the 9-foot wall around Gentleman Johnny Marconi's Gold Coast estate, making edges sharper, shadows blacker, until it looked like a barrier made of gaping white skulls. Trees grew up thick on the other side of the wall, blocking the view of the interior, though no branches extended far enough to provide a way to climb over it. "We've got to get over the wall," I said to the enormous dark wolf beside me, keeping my voice low as we all crouched in the shadows of the bushes across the street from Marconi's estate. "There'll be security on it. Maybe cameras. Maybe infrared beams. Maybe something else. I want you to find a way past it." The wolf flickered her amber eyes toward me and made a soft, assenting growl. Then she simply turned and faded into the darkness, leaving 5 more furry, crouching shapes grouped around me. The alphas didn't exactly inspire confidence, but they'd all managed to master enough rudimentary magic to transform themselves into very, very close approximations of wolves, at least. It was something. Susan had parked the van on a hill leading up to Marconi's estate and remained in it in case we needed a quick getaway. When we arrived, nude Tara West and 5 young people, 3 female and 2 male, had leapt out of the van, and the alphas hurriedly tumbled out of their robes. "Hell's bells," I complained. "We're on a public street. Can't you be something besides naked here, people?" Tara had smirked and, in a liquid shimmer, become a gaunt, dark wolf, a beast fully as large as Denton and his cronies had been, but with a narrower muzzle and cleaner proportions. Like Denton and his crew of Hexenwolfen, she kept the exact same shade and color of her eyes, even in wolfish form. "Well," I demanded of the others, "let's hurry it up." Georgia had slipped her lean body from her dark robe and melted in a few seconds into her wolf shape, then had quickly slipped past me to go to Tara. Billy growled something under his breath as he shrugged out of his robe, catching one sleeve on his arm as he began to change. Billy Wolf had stumbled over the robe, still hanging on his forepaw, tripped and tumbled into the street with a woof of expelled breath and a little whimper. I rolled my eyes. Billy the Wolf had snarled and struggled out of his robe, picked it up carefully in his teeth like a large and particularly grumpy-looking Benji, and put it back in the van. One of the other girls had said, a red-haired lass who filled out her robe a little too generously. "We're still a little new at this." She covered herself with her arms awkwardly and let her robe fall from her shoulders as she whispered a little chant, and had become a rather round, hefty-looking she-wolf with dark auburn fur. She moved daintily to the edge of the cargo van and had minced, despite her weight, down the street. The other 2 young people, a lanky, dark-haired boy and a scrawny girl with mouse-brown hair, had made the change and loped up the hill after Tara, and then we all had moved as quickly as we could to the rear of Marconi's estate. Surrounded by a high stone wall, the property occupied an entire block, bounded on all 4 sides by individual streets. None of us had known the layout to Marconi's place, so we had chosen to approach from the rear on general principle of sneakiness. I hadn't thought it would be wise to walk up to the front door, so I had dispatched Tara to find us a way in while I remained behind with the Alphas. I found myself tapping my fingers on my thighs as I crouched, restless. I soon realized that if I was tense, the would-be werewolves were twice as keyed up. The darkest furred one, Billy, I thought, rose to his paws and started away in the opposite direction from which Tara had gone. Georgia growled at him, Billy growled back, and the other males rose to follow him. Great, I thought. I can't afford to let the Alphas wander off now, no matter how restless they are. Hey, I said quietly, you can't go herring off now. If there's a way inside, Tara will find it. The wolves all turned their heads and their very human eyes toward me. Billy planted his paws stubbornly and growled. Oh, don't give me that, I snapped, glaring at him without meeting his eyes. You promised you'd play this my way, Billy. This isn't time to be messing around. Billy's stance became less certain, and I beckoned all of them toward me. If I could keep them listening until Tara got back, at least I could be sure that they'd be around when I needed them. Huddle up, everyone, I said. I wanted to go over some things before we go in. There was a brief silence, and then a crowding of furry, heavy bodies and a snuffling of wet noses. 10 ears pricked up and rotated toward me, and 10 bright, human eyes fastened on me from lupine faces. I suppressed a sudden urge to say, Good evening, class. I'm your teacher, Mr. Dresden, and instead put on my most serious expression. You all know what's at stake tonight, I said, that we could all get killed. We're going to be confronting a bunch of law enforcement people who have gotten hold of some magic that's as black as anything I've ever seen, and are using it to turn themselves into wolves. They've lost control of the power they've grabbed. They're killing people. And if we don't stop them, they're going to kill a lot more. Especially me, because I know too much. I'm a danger to them. But I don't want that. I don't want anyone to get killed. Not us, and not them. Maybe they deserve it, maybe not. The power they grabbed has turned into a drug for them, and they're not really in control of themselves anymore. I just don't think we'd be much different than them if we went out there planning to wipe them out. It isn't enough to stand up and fight darkness. You have to stand apart from it, too. You've got to be different from it. I cleared my throat. Hell, I'm not good at this. Go for their belts, if you can, just like I did in the alley. Once their belts are off, they're not going to be as crazy, and maybe we'll be able to talk to them. I glanced up at the wall and back down. Just don't get killed, guys. Do what you have to do to stay alive. That's your first priority. And if you got to kill them to do it, then don't hesitate. There was a great chorus of growls from around me, led by the wolf Billy, but that was a great thing about being the only human being there. I was the only one who could talk. There wouldn't have been any arguments, even if they had disagreed. Their enthusiasm was a little intimidating. If you are any louder, wizard, Tara's soft voice came from behind me, we might as well walk through the front gate. I jumped and looked to see Tara, naked and human, crouched down a few feet away. I wish you wouldn't do that, I hissed at her. Did you find a way in? Yes, she said. A place where the wall has crumbled. But it is far for you to walk, around along the eastern wall, toward the front of the property. We must run if we are to get inside in time. I grimaced. I'm not in any shape to run anywhere. It would seem you have little choice. I also saw many streaks of light across the front gate. There are black boxes with glass eyes every 70 or 80 paces. They do not see the crumbling place. It is a fortunate position. Cameras, I muttered. Hell. Come, wizard, Tara said, crouching down on all fours. We have no time to waste if you are to join us. The pack can cover the distance in moments, but you must hurry. Tara, I've had a rough couple of days. I'd fall over in about 2 minutes if I tried to run somewhere. The woman blinked passionless amber eyes up at me. Your point? I'm going over the wall right here, I said. Tara looked up at the wall and shook her head. I cannot bring the pack over that wall. They are not strong enough to keep changing back and forth. They have no hands in their wolf form. Just me, then. I guess you all can find me? Tara snorted. Of course, but it is foolish for you to go over the wall alone. And what if the cameras see you? Let me worry about the cameras, I said. Help me up to the top. Then you and the Alpha circle around and rendezvous with me. Tara scowled, the expression dark. I think this is foolish, Wizard. If you are too wounded to run, then you are too wounded to go in alone. We don't have time, I said, with a glance up at the moon, to argue about this. Do you want my help or don't you? Tara let out a sound somewhere between a snort and a snarl, and for a moment, tension in her muscles made them stand out hard against her skin. One of the Alphas let out a little whimper and stepped from us. Very well, Wizard, Tara said. I will show you the nearest camera and help you over the wall. Do not move from where you land. We do not know who is on the other side of the wall or where. Don't worry about me, I said. Worry about yourself. If there's a good way through the wall, Denton might show up there, too, to go in. Or Mac Finn might. Mac Finn, Tara said, traces of pride in her voice and fear in her eyes. Will not even notice that the wall got in his way. I grimaced. Just show me the camera. Tara led me forward through the dark, silent and naked, and looking as though she didn't mind the cold evening at all. The grass was damp, plush, and deep. Tara pointed out the small, silent square of the video camera settled into the wall across the street, and almost entirely hidden by the shadows of the trees. I licked my lips and leaned toward the camera, keeping my own form obscured by the bushes. I squinted my eyes and drew in my will, trying to focus. My head started to pound at once, and I felt sweat break out beneath my arms and across my forehead. Hexing up anything mechanical is usually fairly simple. The field of magic that surrounds practitioners of the art plays havoc with the implements of technology. A passing thought on the right kind of day can blow out a cellular phone or kill a photocopier. This was the wrong kind of day. That field of energy around me was severely depleted from its usual levels, and the metaphysical muscles I would normally use to manipulate that energy were screaming in agony, reflected in pain throughout my body. But I needed to get inside, and I really did think that I wouldn't be able to make it all the way around the property. I was running on empty already, and too much more would leave me gasping like a fish out of water and wishing I was home in bed. I forced calm on my thoughts and focused all the energy I had, and it hurt me, starting in my head and spreading out into weary aches in my knees and elbows. But the energy built and built, and with it pain, until I could hold it together no longer. Malevaso, I whispered, and pushed my hand out at the square shape, like a grade school girl throwing a baseball wrong-handed. The power I'd gathered, though it felt like it was about to split me at the seams, rushed out in an almost impotent little hiccup of magic and swirled drunkenly toward the security camera. For a long time, nothing happened. And then there was a flash of light and a tiny shower of sparks from the rear of the box. Smoke drizzled up from the camera in a quavering plume, and I felt a small surge of triumph. At least I had something left in me, even if it was aneurysm causing labor to perform the mildest of tasks. All right, then, I said a second later, my voice somewhat thready. Let's go. We looked around and made sure no cars were about. Then Tara, the Alphas, and I rushed across the road through some decorative leafy bushes to the high stone wall. Tara laced her fingers together to form a stirrup. I put my good foot in it and pushed up hard. She heaved me up and threw me over the wall. I caught myself at the top, saw the car's headlights coming, and swiftly rolled down the other side, falling heavily into damp, muddy earth. It was dark. It was really dark. I was crouched at the base of the wall, underneath a spreading canopy of bare tree branches and stubborn sycamore leaves. Moonlight filtered through in random places, but it only served to make the dark spots all the more gloomy. My own black leather duster was utterly invisible, and I remembered reading somewhere that the gleam of my eyes and teeth would be the most likely to give me away. But since I didn't feel like sitting in the dark with my eyes closed, I didn't. Instead, I crouched and got my confiscated gun ready in one pocket and took my ace in the hole out of the other, getting that ready as well. I shivered and worked hard to remind myself not to be afraid. Then I waited in the darkness for my allies and waited and waited. Time passed, and I knew that a minute would feel like an hour, so I began counting. one number for every deliberate breath. The wind blew through the trees, brisk and cool. Leaves rustled, and droplets of rainwater fell from the trees around me, making little pattering sounds as they struck my new coat. They clung to the leather in tight beads and caught pieces of moonlight in them, brilliant against the black. The smell of rich earth and damp stone rose with the wind, and for a moment it did almost feel as though I was in a forest, rather than on a crime lord's private estate in the north end of Chicago. I took deep breaths, a little comforted by the illusion, and kept on counting, and waited. Nothing happened. No wolves, no sounds, nothing. It wasn't until I got to 100 that I started to get really nervous. My stomach began a slow twist that made weak sensations lace out through my arms and legs like slivers of ice. Where was Terra? Where were the Alphas? It shouldn't have taken them nearly so long to get to the inside of the wall and then cover the distance back to me. Though the estate was huge, the distance surely meant little to the flashing speed of a wolf. The evening had obviously been moving along entirely too smoothly, I thought. Something had gone wrong. I was alone. Chapter 29. Alone. It's one of those small words that means entirely too much, like fear or trust. I'm used to working alone. It goes with the territory. Wizards at my level of skill and strength, well, my usual levels, are few and far between. Maybe no more than 24 in the United States, with a slightly higher concentration of them in Europe, Africa, and Asia. But there is a difference between working alone and finding yourself facing a hat full of foes on a cold night, while wounded, in the dark, and practically helpless. It took me about 10 seconds to become acutely aware of that difference. Fear settled in comfortably. Fear was something I was used to. I was able to think past it, to focus on my predicament. Yay for me. My body reacted the same old way, keying up for fight or flight, while I forced my breathing to stay even. The smart thing to do would be to run, turn around and go back to the van and have Susan drive me the hell away. Granted, I probably couldn't even climb the wall on my own, but I could have tried. But I was already committed. I was here to do battle with the forces of evil, such as they were. I had dropped the challenge to them, not the other way around. Besides, if Terra and the kids were in trouble, I was the only one who could help them. I climbed to my feet, getting out the gun, and moved forward through the woods in a direction that seemed perpendicular to the line of the stone wall behind me. The woods were thick, sycamores and poplars giving way to evergreens with scratchy, low branches. I slipped through them as best I could, moving as quietly as I could manage. I didn't think I made more noise than the wind did, as it rattled the branches and the falling leaves and stirred more droplets of water to fall. In time, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, I came to the edge of the woods and looked out onto Gentleman Johnny Marconi's estate. It was magnificent, something out of a Home and Garden magazine. You could have put a small golf course in Marconi's backyard. A long ways off, at the front of the property, Marconi's huge white house stood serene and flawless, artistically illuminated by dozens of lights, with a veranda or patio larger than a dance floor plotted out at the rear. Behind it, 3 enormous square plots, side by side, contained lit and lovely gardens, terraced down a gently sloping hill toward me. At the hill's base was a pretty little vale, and there was a small pond, which I realized after a moment was an enormous concrete-lined swimming pool lit from beneath the surface. The pool was irregularly shaped, and one corner of the pool stirred near the surface. Steam lay thick over the water. Standing stately sentinel toward the center of the vale was a ring of evergreens, thick and stocky trees that concealed whatever was at their center. 2 rounded hillocks decorated the left side of the vale's landscape, one of them surrounded by what looked like a replica of a small ruined shrine or a temple, all cracked marble and fallen columns. The whole place was well lit, both by silver moonlight and by lighting placed at strategic intervals. The lawn was immaculate, and the trees dotted the grounds in a sort of careless perfection that only an army of expensive gardeners could possibly have maintained. And they say the crime doesn't pay. I took a position behind a screen of trees and brush and looked around the grounds with a careful, stealthy caution. I didn't have long to wait. There was a rush of motion from beneath one of the trees on the far side of the estate, and a swift dark form, a dark-furred wolf, Billy, I thought, flew from beneath one tree toward a patch of dark shadow on the grass, not 20 feet from me. I tensed and started to rise from my hiding place in the brush to call out to the wolf as he ran. A bright red dot of light appeared against the wolf's fur. There was a hollow sound, something I could hardly hear, like a politely covered cough. I saw the wolf jerk, a flash of blue feathered against its fur, and then the beast tumbled into a roll and fell to the ground. It struggled for a moment back to its feet and reached for the dart in its flank and its jaws. Its balance wavered, and the wolf staggered to one side and fell. I saw its chest heaving, and one of its rear legs twitched spasmodically. I thought I could see the beast's eyes, Billy's eyes, focus on me for a moment, and then they glazed over and went vacant. "Nice shot," called a deep, tense voice. In the ring of evergreens, there was a motion, and then Denton appeared, walking out across the grass toward the fallen wolf. His dark, short hair was still immaculately rigid. I couldn't see the veins in his forehead, despite the bright light. It was a subtle change in him, one of several. His tie was loose, his jacket was unbuttoned. He moved with less steel in his backbone, more fire in his belly. There was an animal quality to him, a surety and savagery of purpose that had been uncertain before. And what it meant was a lot more significant than the changes that showed on his exterior. His restraint was gone. Whatever last remnants of doubt or regret that had enabled him to maintain his own self-control and some measure of control over the other Hexenwolfen had vanished in the blood frenzy in the Full Moon garage. It was in every line of him now, in every step, every flicker of his eyes. The man had become a predator. From the evergreens behind him appeared the rest of the Hexenwolfen. Ben, now dressed only in a white dress shirt and a gray business skirt, her legs dark and rippling with muscle in the moonlight. Harris, his ears still sticking out, his freckles, dark spots against pale skin. His manner restless and hungry. And Wilson, still in his wrinkled suit, with his shirt unbuttoned, his pot belly overlapping the belt of dark fur that was around his waist. He stroked and patted it with his fat fingers. His mouth was set in an odd, dangerous grin. Denton moved across the grass to the fallen wolf and nudged it with his toe. 6, he said. Did you count 6? 6, Ben confirmed, her voice throaty. Can we have them now? She reached Denton's side and pressed up against him, lifting one leg to rub against his, burying it to the top of her thigh as she did. Not yet, Denton said. He looked around him thoughtfully, and my gaze followed his. Scattered around a circle of perhaps 50 yards diameter were several dark lumps I had taken to be indentations in the ground, shadows cast by the moon in the ground's lighting. I looked again and saw, with a little surge of fearful understanding, that they weren't indentations. They were wolves, my allies. The dark patch Billy had been running for gave a little whimper, and I thought I saw the moon glint off George's tawny coat. I looked around and counted the fallen. 6. I couldn't tell them apart very well. Couldn't tell which of them, if any, was Terra, but I counted 6 fallen wolves upon the ground. All of them, I thought, with a panic rush of fear. All of them had been taken. Come on, Harris said, his voice tight, strained. Fuck McFinn. He isn't showing up. Let's take them out, all of them, and go find Dresden. We'll get your belt soon enough, kid, Wilson snorted, his fingers stroking the fur belt over his belly. If you hadn't been so stupid as to lose it, Harris snarled, and Denton shook Ben from his side to get between the other two men. Shut up, now. We don't have time for this. Harris, we'll go after the wizard as soon as we can. Wilson, keep your fat mouth shut if you like your tongue where it is, and both of you back off. The men made low, growling noises, and they took steps away from one another. I licked my lips. I was shaking. The gun felt heavy in my hand. There were only the four of them, I thought. They weren't more than 30 feet away. I could start shooting right now. If I got lucky, I could down them all. They were werewolves, but they weren't invincible. I slipped the safety off the pistol and drew a steadying breath. It was a damn fool thing to do, and I knew it. Life is not the movies. It wasn't likely I'd be able to shoot them all before they could draw and shoot back, but I didn't have much choice. Denton turned toward the first hillock with its artfully ruined temple and waved. "All right," he called. "That's all of them." A pair of shapes appeared from the lights that shone from the temple and then came down the hill toward Denton and the Hexenwolfen. Marconi was dressed in a flannel shirt, jeans, and a hunter's vest, and he wore a gleaming rifle, an enormous scope mounted on it, in one hand. Hendricks, hulking beside him in muscle-bound silence, was dressed in what looked like black military fatigues, bearing the gun I'd seen earlier, a knife, and various other gear. Hendricks' eyes flickered over Denton and his associates warily. I stared at Marconi in shock. It took me a moment to pick my jaw up off the ground and piece together what was going on. Marconi didn't know. He didn't know that Denton and his company were out to get him. He must have blamed the other killings on MacFinn and the Alphas. So now Denton had Marconi and the Alphas there. Once MacFinn arrived, he would be able to kill everyone he wanted dead, everyone who knew what was going on, and be able to make up any story he damn well pleased. Everyone but me, that is. He did not, as yet, have his hands on me. "These are all we saw on the monitors," Marconi corrected. "There was a malfunction in Camera 6 at the rear line of the property. Mr. Dresden and such malfunctions tend to go hand in hand." "Damn it." "Are you sure the wizard isn't one of them?" Denton demanded. "One of the wolves?"
"I think not," Marconi answered. "But I suppose anything is possible."
Denton scowled. "Then he's not here."
"If he truly offered you a challenge, he's here," Marconi said, his tone completely confident. "I'm certain of that."
"And he just watched his werewolf friends get shot down?" Denton asked.
"Wolves run faster than men," Marconi pointed out. "Possibly he hasn't caught up to them yet. He could be watching us even now."
"You're giving him too much credit," Denton said, but I saw his eyes instinctively shift toward the blackness of the growth of woods. If I stood up, he would be looking right at me. I froze, holding my breath.
"Am I?" Marconi smiled and leaned down to pluck the feathered dart from Billy's furry flank. "The tranquilizers likely won't hold these beasts for very long. Decisions need to be made, gentlemen. And if you are to hold to your end of the bargain, you had best get to work producing."
I don't know if Marconi noticed Ben's sudden tension, the way she slid her hands over her stomach, but I did.
"Kill these dogs now," she said in a low, heated voice. "It prevents complications later in the evening."
Marconi tisked. "Short-sighted. Let MacFinn tear them to pieces when he arrives, and any medical examiner won't bother to look for the tranquilizers. If one of you does it, it will create awkward questions once forensics takes a look at things. And I thought that was the point of you coming to me with this offer, reducing questions."
Ben lifted her lips away from her teeth, and I saw the tips of her breast stiffen beneath her white shirt. "I hate slimy scum like you, Marconi," she purred, sliding her hand from her thigh up over her hip and beneath the buttons of her shirt. Marconi's eyes narrowed on her, and as though connected to the crime lord by some telepathic leash, Hendricks made one simple motion, a shift of his forward arm, that chambered a round on the gun with a cold little click-clack. Denton gave Marconi a sharp look and took hold of Ben's wrist with his hand. The woman tensed for a second, resisting him, but then allowed Denton to draw her hand away from the belt that was surely beneath her shirt. Denton released her, and Ben lowered her hands, visibly relaxing. Marconi and Hendricks never so much as blinked or broke a sweat. Fragile situations like this one were evidently second nature to them. I let out a breath I'd been holding for a long time. 6-1, and ready for a fight. If I attacked them now, I didn't have a prayer. If I tried to move, to fade back into the trees, they would be likely to notice me. Damn. Denton glanced to the trees once more, and I held my breath again. "Don't worry, Marconi," he said. "We'll turn the wizard over to you once we find him, no questions asked."
"That being the case," Marconi said, "I suggest you start looking while I make preparations for Mr. MacFin. Please remember that I want Mr. Dresden alive, if possible."
My throat constricted, and if I hadn't been holding my breath, I think it would have let out a little squeak. What in the world would John Marconi want with me after the incident in the parking garage? Nothing good, certainly. Nothing I wanted to think about. Damn. This night was getting spookier all the time.
"Of course, Mr. Marconi," Denton said, his tone a little too polite. "Do you have any suggestions where we would start looking?"
Marconi ignored the sarcasm, flicked a switch on the side of his rifle, and pointed it negligently at the tree line. "Over there ought to do." The red dot of the laser sight settled onto a leaf 6 inches to the left of my head, and the thready pulse of fear in my chest turned into an icy white streak of horror. Damn. Chapter 30. If I ran, I would have been seen and pursued and likely torn apart. If I remained where I was hidden, I would be found and then torn apart, or shot, or tranquilized and given to Johnny Marconi. A poor set of choices, but I wasn't going to get any better ones by sitting on my ass. So I got my feet underneath me and started easing back into the woods, the confiscated semi-automatic still in my hand.
"Hold it," Denton said. "Did you hear that?"
"What?" Ben asked. I could hear a sudden eager tension in her voice, and I struggled not to make any more noise as I hurried my pace back into the shelter of the deeper trees.
"Quiet," Denton snarled, and I froze in place.
Wind and rain were the only sounds for a few minutes in the chilly autumn night.
"Over there," Denton said after a moment. "I think I heard it over that way."
"Could be a raccoon, squirrel, or cat," Wilson suggested.
"Don't be naive," came Marconi's voice, laced with scorn. "It's him."
There was an immediate sound of a slide being worked on a handgun, a round being chambered into place.
"Move forward," said Denton. "That way. Fan out and we'll take him. Watch yourself. We don't know what he can do. Don't take any chances."
His voice came closer as he spoke, and I nearly bolted. There was a couple of assenting sounds and another couple of weapons being readied. Footsteps came toward me through the grass. After that, I did bolt, just stood up and ran, bent over as low as I could. There was a shout from behind me and the bark of a gun being fired. I pointed the semi-automatic above me, afraid to fire back at them for fear of hitting Terra or one of the Alphas by mistake, and pulled the trigger twice. The gunshots must have surprised them because Denton and the others scattered for cover behind the nearest trees. I ran deeper into the woods, marshaling my thoughts. I had gained a little time, but time to do what? Running would only put me up against a stone wall, and I doubted I'd be able to climb it with a bum foot and a wounded shoulder. And I could only play the rabbit in the woods for so long before I was found. Damn it, I thought. I'm no rabbit. It was about time the hunters became the hunted around here. I moved ahead, silent and intent now, and scanned around me, searching for the sort of place I would need. I found it almost at once. An inward curved hollow at the base of a large tree, and slid into it, nestling into the wood's embrace. I put my head down, hiding the paleness of my face and the gleam of the whites of my eyes, and listened. They came forward quietly, and without any lights flickering around the edges of my vision. Maybe Denton and his cronies were getting used to the darkness. They were moving forward in a ragged line, 20 or 30 paces apart, and somehow keeping mostly parallel. They were all still on 2 feet by the sound of the steps, thank my lucky stars. If they'd gone to wolf form, they might have had me. Of course, on 2 legs, they still had their hands free to hold guns of their own. There are pros and cons to everything, I suppose. I held my breath when footsteps approached me. They came within 10 feet, then 5. I felt the brush stir when someone walked past no more than a foot away, making the leaves brush up against me. They stopped right there, and I heard a little woofling sound, sniffling. I thought of the aroma of my brand new leather coat and clenched my jaws down slightly, tension thrumming through me and making my legs shake. About 10 billion years went by, and then whoever it was began walking again, forward and past me. I would have let out a sigh of relief if the most dangerous part of my plan wasn't still to come. I got up from my hiding place, stepped forward, and jammed the barrel of the semi-automatic against the back of the neck of the person before me. It was Denton. His back arched, and he sucked in a stunned breath. "Quiet," I whispered. "Don't move." Denton hissed, but froze in place. "Dresden, I should kill you now." "Try it," I said, and thumbed back the hammer of the gun. "But after the loud noise, remember to keep going down the tunnel and toward the light." Denton's shoulders shifted a fraction, and I said, "Don't move your arms at all. Reach for that belt, and I'll kill you before you're halfway to Furry, Denton. Drop the gun." Denton moved his fingers enough to close the safety on his gun and let it fall. "Not bad, Dresden," he said. "But this isn't going to do you any good. Put the gun down, and we'll talk about this." "Smooth, polite, nice delivery," I said. "They teach you that at the FBI? "Don't make this any harder on yourself than it has to be," Denton said, his voice toneless. "You can't get out of this." "They always say that," I said, and used my free arm, though it made my shoulder twitch, to take him by the collar and hold him steady. "My arm's feeling a little weak," I said. "Don't do anything to make me slip." I felt his body tense at my words. "What are you doing, Dresden?" "You and me, we're going to turn around," I said, with a little shove of the gun against his neck to emphasize the point. "And then we're going to order all of your people out of the trees and back into the light. They'll each call to you from there so that I know they're in front of me, and then we are going to go see them." "What do you hope to accomplish here, Dresden?" Denton said. I let go of his neck, pressed close, and reached around him to remove the wolf pelt belt from around his middle. I saw his jawline shift as I took the belt away, but he remained still and quiet, his hands in the air. "I was just going to ask you the same thing, Denton," I said. "Now, call your buddies out of the trees." Denton might have been a cool customer, maybe a treacherous sneak, maybe a murderer, but one thing he wasn't was a fool. He called out to the other three agents and told them to get out of the trees. "Dent," Wilson called, "are you okay?" "Just do it," Denton answered. "It will all be clear in a minute." They did it. I heard them move out of the woods and call to him from the cut level grass of Marconi's estate. "Now," I said, "walk. Don't trip, because I swear to God I'd rather blow your head off over a misunderstanding than get suckered by a trick and killed." "Maybe you should put the safety on," Denton said, "because if you kill me, you'll never get out of here alive." I hate it when the bad guys have a point. But I chose to err on the side of Denton getting blown apart and left the safety where it was. I slung the wolf belt over my shoulder, took Denton's collar again, and said, "Walk." He did. We walked out of the deep darkness of the woods and into the light. I kept at the edge of the darkness and put a tree's trunk to my back, keeping Denton between me and the bad guys. They were spread out, the three of them in a little half circle about 30 feet away, and they all had guns. You know, it would have been one hell of a marksman who could get at me with Denton's broad, solid form in front of me and the shadows veiling me, but I didn't take chances. I crouched down behind him some, leaving nothing but the corner of my head and one eye showing. At least that way, I thought, if they shot me, I'd never feel it. "Hi, guys," I said, a bit lamely. "I got your boss. Put the guns down, take your belts off, and walk away from them nice and slow, or I'll kill him." A part of me, probably the smarter part, groaned at my course of action and started cataloging the number of federal and state crime codes I was breaking into tiny pieces by taking a member of the Federal Bureau of Investigations hostage and threatening to kill him and attempting to take hostage three more. I stopped counting broken laws at 10 and waited to see the Hexenwolfen's response. "To hell with you," Ben snarled. A silver-haired woman dropped her gun and ripped off her shirt, revealing a torso that was impressive in a number of senses, and another wolf hide belt. "I'll tear your fucking throat out myself." "Deborah," Denton said, his voice strained. "Don't. Please." "Go ahead, bitch," growled Harris, His big ears created a half moon of shadows of blackness on the sides of his head. Denton buys it, we all get promoted. Hell, the wizard will probably shoot you while he's at it. Ben whirled toward Harris, lifting her hands as though she were strangling him, fingers clenching like talons. Shut up, I said. Both of you. Put your guns down. Now. Harris sneered at me. You won't, Dresden. You don't have the guts.
Roger, Denton said very quietly. You're an idiot. The man's in a corner. Now put down your gun.
I blinked, surprised at the unexpected support. It made me instantly suspicious. That Marconi was out of sight did not mean he was out of mind either. Where was he? Crouched somewhere, aiming that rifle at me. I kept an eye out for bright red dots.
That's right, I appended a Denton's statement. You are an idiot. Drop the gun. You too, Wilson, I added, glancing at the overweight agent. And you and Ben, take your belts off, too. Leave them on the ground.
Do it, Denton confirmed, and I got a little more nervous. The man was relaxed now, not resisting me. His voice was solid, confident, unimpressed. That was bad. Denton's pack obeyed him, if reluctantly. Ben dropped the belt to the ground in the same way Scrooge might have let fall a string of diamonds, a visible ache in the motion. Wilson grunted as his belt came unfastened and his belly flopped out a little as the catch released. He left it on the ground by his gun. Harris glanced at me, but he lowered his gun too.
Now, step back, all of you.
Yes, Denton said. Harris, Wilson, step back to the trees and bring out what we left there.
Hey, I said, what the hell are you talking about? Don't move, any of you.
Harris and Wilson smirked at me and began walking toward the trees.
Get your asses back here.
Shoot at them, Mr. Dresden, Denton said, and you will have to take your gun off me. I think I can reach it, if you do that, and turn this into a fight. You are resourceful and intelligent, but you are also wounded. I don't think you could overcome me hand to hand.
I glanced between the two men and Denton.
Damn it, I said. What are you up to, Denton?
You try anything funny, anything at all, and you're not going to live to regret it.
I'm with the FBI. We don't do anything that could be construed as funny, Mr. Dresden. I swore quietly and could all but feel Denton's mouth stretch into a smile.
Why? I asked him. Why did you get involved with these belts? Why are you doing this?
Denton began to shrug, but evidently thought better of it.
Too many years of seeing men like Marconi laugh at the law, of seeing people hurt by him, death, misery brought on by him and people like him. I was just tired of watching. I decided to stop him, and men like him.
By killing them, I said.
I was given the power, I used it.
What gives you the right to mandate their deaths?
What gives them the right, Denton asked, to kill? Should I stand by and let them slaughter Dresden, if I could stop it? I have the power and the responsibility to use it.
I felt a little shiver run through me as the words struck close to home. And the other people? The innocents who have died?
Denton hesitated. His reply was quiet. It was unfortunate. An accident. It was never my intention.
The belts do more than make you fuzzy, Denton. They change the way you think, the way you act.
I can control my people, Denton said.
Like you did last month, I said.
He swallowed and said nothing.
And you knew, didn't you? You knew they'd find out, and that's why you sent me to the Full Moon Garage.
The vein on his forehead pulsed.
After the deaths, I was warned about the governing body, a sort of magic police, the White Council, that worked for them.
I almost laughed.
Yeah, well, someone told you part of the story anyway, Denton. That's why you messed up with MacFin's circle, isn't it? You needed a patsy, and you turned MacFin loose, knowing that the council would suspect him. The street wolves for the cops, and MacFin for the council.
Denton snarled. Necessary sacrifices. There was work to be done, Dresden.
Oh, yeah? As one of the aforementioned sacrifices, I don't find myself agreeing with you, I said. To hell with the law, right? That's what you're saying, that you're above the law, like Marconi.
Denton grew tense again and turned his head a bit toward me, like he might have been listening.
I pressed him, hard, desperate to reach him. If I could, I might be able to get out of this situation after all. Those belts, man, the power they've given you, it's bad. You can't handle it. It's gotten into your head and you aren't thinking straight. Give them up. You can still walk away from this. Do the right thing. Come on, Denton. Don't throw away everything you fought for all these years. There's a better way than this. Denton was silent for a long time. Harris and Wilson disappeared in the thick ring of pine trees. Ben watched us, her eyes bright, her body muscled and firm in the moonlight, her breasts rather pretty and distracting as she breathed. She looked from the pair of us to the fur belt on the ground, alternatively, and her breaths came ragged. "Look at her," I said. "Those belts are like a drug. Is this the kind of person she was? Is this the kind of person you want to be? Wilson? Harris? Were they always like they are now? You're turning into monsters, man. You've got to get out of this before you're all the way gone." Denton closed his eyes, then shook his head. "You're a decent man, Mr. Dresden, but you've got no idea of how the world works. I'm sorry you've gotten in the way." He opened his eyes again. "Necessary sacrifices." "Damn it," I said. "Don't you see that this won't do you any good? Even if you do get away with wiping out everyone here tonight, Murphy's going to piece together what happened." Denton glanced at me and said, like a mantra, "Necessary sacrifices." I swallowed, suddenly more cold than I had been. It was eerie, the way Denton said the words, so matter-of-fact, calm, rational. There was no doubt in him, when he should have been afraid. Only fools and madmen know that kind of certainty, and I'd already noted that Denton was no fool. Harris and Wilson emerged from the trees, carrying something between them. Someone hooded, arms and legs bound. Harris had a knife in one hand and was against the base of the hood, which looked to be a pillow. His big ears and freckles were at sharp odds with the arrogant competence with which he held the knife. "Damn you," I said quietly. Denton said nothing. Ben's eyes glittered in the moonlight, bright and vacant of anything but lust or hunger. The two agents brought the prisoner over, and Wilson dropped the legs. Harris kept the knife steady, while the overweight man went to remove the hood, but I'd already seen the cast on the prisoner's arm. Murphy's face was pale, her golden hair bleached to silver by the moonlight and falling down around her eyes. Her mouth was covered in cloth or duct tape, one of the two, and there was blood clotted at the base of one nostril, a bruise purpling over one eye. She blinked for a moment, then kicked at Wilson. With the legs bound, it was ineffective, but when Harris snarled and pressed a knife against her throat, she stopped struggling. Her blue eyes glared in fury at Harris and then Wilson, and then they settled on me and widened. "Kill me, Mr. Dresden," Denton said quietly. "And Harris will cut the lieutenant's throat. Ben will go for her gun, as will Wilson. Likely they will kill you. And then they will kill these wolves you brought here with you, your allies. But even if you get us all first, Murphy will be dead, and you will be holding the weapon that killed four agents of the FBI." "You bastard," I said. "You cold-blooded bastard." "Necessary sacrifices, Mr. Dresden," Denton said, but it wasn't a calm phrase anymore. It was eager somehow, warmth curving around and through the woods like a lover's hands. "Drop your gun." "No," I said, "I won't." He wouldn't kill another cop, would he? "Then Murphy dies," Denton said. "Harris?" The redhead's shoulders lurched and Murphy tried to scream through the gag. I cried out and swung the barrel of the gun toward Harris. Denton's elbow came back into my gut, and then his fist snapped up into my nose, casting a field of stars across my vision. The gun went off, pointed somewhere, and then Denton slapped it from my hand and drove another blow into my throat that sent me sprawling to the ground, unable to breathe or move. Denton stopped to recover the gun and said, "You should have shot me while you had the chance, Mr. Dresden, instead of moralizing." He pointed it at me, and I watched his lips curve into a slow, hungry smile. "Beautiful moon tonight," he said. "Sort of reminds me of a story. How did it go?" I tried to tell him where he could stick the moon in his story, but it came out a strangled gasp. I still couldn't move. It hurt too much. Denton thumbed at the trigger, sighted down the barrel at my left eye, and said, "Ah, yes. And I'll huff, and I'll puff, and I'll blow your house down. Goodbye, wizard." Death by nursery tale. Hell's bells. Chapter 31. The barrel of Denton's gun looked bigger and deeper than the national debt as it swung to bear on my face. His gray eyes glittered down the sights at me, and I saw the decision to pull the trigger flash across them. Before he could, I met his eyes hard, shoved myself out toward him with a sudden screaming pain at my temples, and locked him into a soul gaze. There was a rushing sensation, as there usually was, a feeling of movement forward and then down, like being sucked into a whirlpool. I rode the sensation into Denton's head, a brief doubt crossing my mind. Maybe getting shot would be better than wading heart deep into Denton's soul. I can't describe what I found there very well.
Insert CD 8.